right, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. This is Webtoon Wednesday, and today we're going to be talking about a strip called My Dear Cold-Blooded King, and I have the creator of that strip joining me today. Kate, welcome to the show.
Hi. Glad to be here.
Yeah, really interested in this strip, really enjoying it. Haven't read it all. Obviously, I just started the other day, and you have quite a few episodes.
A lot.
I was literally reading like right up until the time we were getting on to record. I'm hooked immediately. So, why don't you give everybody a tease? Let them know what My Dear Cold-Blooded King is all about.
Sure. It's long and twisted and messed up, as all good historical dramas are. But the basic premise is you have a like basic peasant farmer's daughter, who stumbles upon a little boy in the forest and finds out, oh no, he's got assassins after him. So she saves his life and inadvertently catches the eye of the dreaded Blood King, who is a pretty terrible guy. He has a bad reputation, or so people, you know, talk. And it just kind of goes from there, and she learns about the Blood King and who he is, and you know, along the way, maybe falls in love. So that's basically the gist of it.
Yeah, and it's you don't tell it short, because it's very compelling as well, and we'll get into that in a second. But I always like to ask people the first time that they come on, how did they come to discover comics, sequential art? Obviously, you're a creator. You have your webtoon strip here, but did you read comics growing up? Was it always a love of yours?
Yes, definitely. I am a giant comic nerd. I got into comics at around 13 years old, somewhere thereabouts, 12 or 13, and I have been obsessed with it ever since I saw like my very first anime, which was Sailor Moon. It hasn't been the same since. I mean, I tried drawing comics, obviously horribly, amateur hour stuff. One thing led to another, and, I kind of just ended up here. Obviously that's the sped up version, but yeah, I've always been into anime and comics and all that stuff.
Yeah, so was it specifically manga, or was it American comics? Were you DC, Marvel? Were there any characters that you really migrated to?
It was definitely all like manga, manhwa, you know, the Korean version. I mean, I just, it's all basically that. Not that I didn't get into, you know, Western style comics. I mean, they were all good too, but my love was definitely for the Japanese and Korean and Chinese stuff that was out there, especially Dragon Ball Z. That's my heart and soul. I'm a nerd.
I find it interesting. It's such a different model. We've talked about it on the show a little bit, not in detail, but the distribution model is different. A lot of manga, you know, they wouldn't imagine going for like 80, like we just had the 80th anniversary of Batman, right? Superman's was last year. It's like, you know, these manga, they have, these stories have beginnings, middles, endings, and you just tell a new story. The idea of a character lasting for, you know, 8 decades in the Eastern style of sequential is, yeah, that's a totally a foreign concept. So it's a bit different over there, and I can see why. You know, as a kid, you could be attracted to that idea of getting in on the ground floor of something, rather than, oh my God, I picked up Batman 600. I need to go back and read the first 599, right?
Right. Yes.
So you mentioned taking a long winding road to become a creator. I wonder, do you remember when you kind of made that decision to see if, you know, let me see if I can really do this, if I can really become a comic creator? Was it a conscious decision, or was it something in the back of your mind that just eventually happened?
I don't know if I ever like considered it to be a conscious decision. I do remember at one point there was a big turning point, but there was like a precursor to that. I had always kept my art to myself. I didn't really share it. I was definitely the quiet nerd in school who drew stuff on computer sheets of paper with a basic, mechanical pencil. And a few people, knew about that nerdy girl in the corner who drew. That's about as far as that went. But it wasn't until sometime in college I started to get a little braver with it. I still hadn't gotten into the digital world yet. That took me some time. After I had gotten what I assumed was my career job as a graphic designer, I was working there, and one day there was an intern in the company, and him and I got close. He was very nice, very supportive, and I'll just give his screen name or username. His online entity is Kobe. Kobe was the one that encouraged me to get online, and I told him that was a horrible idea because people will eat me alive, and I don't want that because I'm a very soft shell, pathetic little person who gets her feelings hurt too easily. But he assured me that it would be safe, so I went on this little site called comictheory.com or .net or something like that. And, it went okay. So then I went to Tapastic and, threw the comic on there, and that went okay. And somewhere along the way, I learned of Webtoon. And so I was like, I don't know what this is, but I'll check it out. And I went there, and the first comic I saw was Siren's Lament by Instant Miso. Yep. And it blew me away. It was just, it had gorgeous, just vertical style comic that I'd never seen before. And there was music to accompany it. The art was gorgeous. The characters were just amazing. I just sat there and I read her story, beginning to end. At the time she had 50 episodes, and I was in love, and I was okay, I cannot post here for sure. I definitely cannot. So I told Kobe, I was I can't do it. This site is too amazing. And he goes, okay, fine, whatever. I guess you can't. Because he was tired of encouraging me and me always telling him I'm not good enough. So I was fine, YOLO. If you say I can't, I guess I will. So I went ahead and I just threw the comic up impulsively just one night. And very quickly, overnight, it got a bunch of subscribers, and I was really floored by it. And a couple months later, I got an email from Webtoon asking me if I wanted to be featured, and honestly, the rest is history. So that's just kind of how it went. And it was basically, could be summed up, I guess, to a single YOLO moment of impulsiveness, because that's the kind of person I am, I guess. I don't know.
That's awesome. We've had Instant Miso on the previous Webtoon Wednesday, so you're in good company. And yeah, I've read Siren's Lament.
Oh, good.
Love it as well. Have you had a chance to meet her or talk to her before?
I've only been able to talk with her through Twitter, messaging, but I've not had the pleasure of meeting her in person yet. I've actually only met one creator in person, and that's Kimchi. She is the creator of I Love You, and she is amazing and super sweet and very shy. But of course, she warms up to you the longer you get to hang around her, and she's a big goofball. But she's the only one I've met in real life. All the other ones I've met and messaged online.
Yeah, it really is a great community of Webtoon creators. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But I wanted to go back to My Dear Cold-Blooded King. What was it about this story? Because, as you said, it's got a little bit of everything. It's certainly the world you've created is very broad in scope, over 100 episodes now. So what was it about this story that kind of compelled you to say, I've got to create this. It's a story that I have to tell.
I've made a few flops of comics, before this comic. And honestly, this comic was just kind of, it was another impulsive thing. I was on a high from reading things Bride of the Water God, which is a huge motivator and inspiration for me, just in art style and in storytelling. And I've always really liked the old Asia kind of thing, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which is about the only experience that I have in it. I actually believe it or not, have not watched any K-dramas or, you know, Japanese historical, Chinese, whatever. I have nothing in that. I just really am fascinated by it. Or maybe Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon had an impact on me. I don't know. But I just have always enjoyed it. So I took, I guess, a montage or a collection of ideas from what I've scrambled around of movies I've seen and other comics I've read and just kind of pieced together this world that is my dear cold-blooded king. And with very little planning, threw it out there. So honestly, I didn't think that this story was going to go anywhere or be anything or anything at all. So it just kind of happened because I'm obsessed with old Asian culture, and I, yeah. Well, it's sorry, I'm like, you know, word vomit.
No, that makes total sense, because when you think about it, right? So you're a creative person, you've got this, you know, love for art. You know, you said you had, you know, the grown up job, the big girl job, we'll call it, doing graphic design. But in the past, this love of manga, this love of Eastern sequential storytelling, and you know, it's like anything. It's like, you know, if I were to make a comic, it would be heavily influenced by, you know, the stuff that I read as a kid that I loved growing up. You know, Batman and Captain America and Spider-Man and that kind of thing. So it makes total sense that you think about it from that perspective. But I'm just blown away by how ambitious this project is. It must have at some point, like, clicked for you, and you felt like, okay, it's taking on a life of its own, and now I know exactly how this story is going to go. Was it like that, or do you still feel like you're flying by the seat of your pants, so to speak, or do you feel like you've settled in?
No, thankfully, I definitely have a handle on it. And what forced me to get a handle on it was my fabulous editor, Paul. He's just amazing. He pretty much just told me that, you know, before we move forward or go any further, I guess this is around episode 10 or so, he was like, you really need to add more to this. You know, you don't have a whole lot. And I was like, okay, all right, sure, I will. And I worked with him, and we went back and forth, and we really just kind of helped expand the world. Technically, he was just a sounding board and someone that asked more questions. He probed further, you know. Whenever I said, oh, this is good enough, my reasoning, he would say, yes, but why do you feel that way for this character? And then why does this character have this motivation? You know, he made me take it further and, you know, forced me to world build and character build. And thanks to him, I was able to get a much more rich and compelling story with a lot more drama and a lot more interweaving webs. And so I'm very grateful to him. I can't really take much credit for it, because he was the one that did prod me and make me ask those questions for myself and be more introspective about the world that is my dear cold-blooded king.
Yeah, you know, that is a perfect description of what a good editor can do for you.
He's fabulous.
Like, this is basically your first work. This is your first story, and you kind of captured lightning in a bottle. And maybe without that support, you know, and maybe we could even call it tough love to some extent. Without that, it might not have been successful. You might not have been able to, you know, sustain and be where you are now.
Oh, yeah. I 100% tell Paul all the time that I have so much to thank him for everything he's done. He's amazing. There are not enough fruit baskets in the world to give that man. So he puts up with a lot.
Yeah, and I'm not that far into the story. I'm only about 20 episodes or so. But one of the big themes that really seemed to resonate with me was this idea of expectation, right? Like, your main character in the story, when it starts out, she's a very strong character, seems to be able to take care of herself.
Yeah.
But this is more of a feudal culture, you know, kind of, you know, ancient Japan with emperors and kings and such. And, you know, women are supposed to be demure and quiet and, you know, almost like a second class citizen. And so there's that expectation from society of this role that you're supposed to play. And then, you know, you even growing up in that society, you have expectations for yourself. Like, what's my role? How do people see me? And so I found that interesting. interesting. But then on the other side of it is how she views the king, like how she expects him to be from everything that she's told and the expectations that go along with that. You know, you hear rumors, you don't know what's true. And in a way, it's very relevant with what's going on right now in kind of our society, with people don't even, they're arguing about what, like, I used to think, like, the truth is the truth. And now all of a sudden, that's being called in to question. And your story seems to almost be prescient in a way, right? Like, be predicting the future, that you're dealing with this idea of expectations. So was that something, that idea of expectations, is that something that always interested you? Or did this idea and theme of the story just happen organically?
I would say that with expectations and subverting those expectations, I'm a huge fan of, like, I don't know if you know what this is, but a red herring, where, you know, you, where someone leads you to believe a certain thing and then poof, you believe the wrong thing, but you believed what they wanted you to believe, only for your expectations to be completely turned on their side and you to go, oh my God, I did not see that coming. So I try to do that. I don't know if I'm always successful, but I just love that kind of storytelling. I like twists and turns. I like surprises, and I like to be surprised. So I try to just surprise other people. And I do have help, or I did rather have help in the beginning, kind of learning how to do that and to hone that skill a little bit more with my editor, who forever will be awesome. And, you know, he did help, to kind of curate that and make it more polished. So hopefully, as I'm going along, I'm still getting good at surprising people and you know, changing their expectations, or, you know, with all that. It's something that I think has always been organic, but has definitely been worked on with some amount of focus. So it has become intentional, whereas it may have started out organically.
Well, I think that idea, I didn't even really, like, catch on to that, which is kind of surprises me. But as you're talking about that, the idea of a red herring, misdirection, I'm like, yeah, that's what makes it so compelling. Because just when you think you know what's going on, you've, like, introduce another character, or the narrative changes slightly, and then you're like, yeah, okay, now I need to keep reading because I want to know about it's like, I've talked about this on the podcast before in terms of storytelling. When you're reading a really good novel where there are different factions, or it's, you know, an ensemble, and they're telling the story of different characters, and you read a certain chapter and it's focused on a certain plot line or story thread, and when you get to the end of that chapter, you know the next chapter is going to start and it's going to move away to tell another part of the story. But you're kind of disappointed because you want to know more about that particular storyline. But then by the time you get finished with the next chapter that's about something different, then you're invested in that one and you don't want that one to shift, you know, because everything is so compelling.
Yes.
Yeah, that's my dear cold-blooded king. It's the story structure is fantastic, and you're constantly introducing, you know, at least through the first 20 episodes that I've read, new characters and new plot twists and threads. And so, yeah, I really commend you on an incredible job, especially considering it's your first work.
Oh yeah, thank you. I do appreciate it. And again, I will keep throwing a bunch of sunshine in Paul's direction. He is the guy in the shadows.
Now, did you have a hard time with pacing as well? I find that to be one of the aspects of sequential storytelling that's hard for creators to get right in the beginning when they're just starting their career. Was that something that you had to work on as well?
Oh my goodness! Yes, I wanted to hurry up and get to the, you know, the Blood King and all the craziness, you know, that is in the story just right away. It didn't quite work out in that way, because Paul was like, I think it's better if you delay this a little bit and do a little bit more of this and that, you know, build this up and this over here. And, you know, kind of taught me how to to build up suspense and intrigue for readers as I, you know, worked my way to, you know, revealing Blood King things. And so it was a little tough in the beginning because I just wanted to hurry, get to the, you know, to the main thing. But as I went on, I learned that there is, you know, a pace, and I guess I've found the pace that works for me, where I feel like it just fast enough, you know, because I don't want it to be dragging, obviously. I want something to happen every episode to the best of my ability, you know, what I'm physically able to accomplish. So it did take a little bit of work, but I think I've got it now. I mean, I've had about 2 years going at this now, so I think I know what I'm doing now.
Yeah,
hopefully.
I find pacing, as I said, to be one of those things that new creators can struggle with. But yeah, once you find what works for you, then it's like you always know what works for you, right? It's like once you learn to ride the bike, you always know how to ride the bike. But what's interesting is sometimes when you start a new project, it requires it to be paced differently, and then you kind of, sometimes you have to learn it all over again, or you can play with pacing and it can work. It can accomplish different things in different stories. So something to keep in mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I
also
wanted to ask you about finding the voices for your characters. Did you find that to be an easy process, or was it easy in some cases with some characters and harder with others?
Do you mean like the voices, like for what, like the voice actors, or do you mean like voices, like their personality?
Yeah, like their personality, like the way they, you know, who they are. Basically.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. So then, I believe the question is, like, did I have a hard time finding out their personalities and
right.
the way they talk and the way they move?
Yes. Exactly.
Okay, good. All right. Just wanted to make sure I'm answering correctly. Yes, I did. And the two that I struggled with the most are two leading men, Ryusaki and Katsu. Those two I had the hardest time with because in the beginning, they were too similar. And I had a hard time kind of like uncovering the kind of characters that they were meant to be, that they, you know, that they are, with, you know, their own, you know, sad backstories or the things that make them who they are. And of course that developed the more that I developed all of the backstories for everyone and all of the, like just all of the deep plot crap, you know, it took a while, to get them figured out, I guess. And the more that I worked with them and tried to just, you know, put myself in their shoes and see the world through their viewpoints, the more that it was easier to figure out how they would respond and how they would talk and what they would say, the sort of actions that they would take. And, you know, as the story progressed, they did become more separate people and take on their own personalities in such a way that not even I had anticipated from the beginning. So they are very much real to me. They took on personalities of their own, and they were the hardest to craft, but I'm happy since they are the two that I am the proudest of, and I think they have the strongest personalities of any race.
Yeah. Now, I find this interesting. Do you you obviously designed them, you know, their visual look first. And then you know, like, as you said, you had a little struggle with, kind of nailing down who they were. Do you feel like once you kind of understood who they were and were able to differentiate them, do you feel like their visual look like changed at all for you, or did it become easier to work on them from a visual aspect once you kind of understood who they were at the core?
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't think that the way a person wears their hair would have much effect, but I mean, when I nailed, you know, Ryusaki and kind of figure out the kind of, you know, dude that he is, like, I started kind of letting him wear his hair down more often and, you know, let it, you know, be tussled around and be messy, because unkempt and wild and unhinged and does what he wants to do. He doesn't give a crap about what you think about it, and he's, you know, that's his personality. And whereas Katsu, you know, he's just much more restrained. Not that he can not be volatile, because he certainly can't get help unhinged and upset, but he's just more of a passive, gentler kind of a character. So I started, you know, maybe drawing his hair a little bit more soft, you know, like a river, not so much like wild and around him. And even the clothes that they wear, I was changing up their outfits to things I think that would suit them more, because the Kriwa, he just has a more serene, gentle kind of a feel about him, whereas Ryusaki is very bold and just audacious and fiery. So, you know, I do believe that their looks kind of changed up as the series developed, of how I got to figure them out as characters.
Yeah, and the overall look of the world, your visual style, it's so beautiful, and you oftentimes mix in this kind of simpler line art that really is impactful, because it's so kind of diametrically opposed to how fleshed out the normal look of the strip is. Can you talk a little bit about developing your visual style? And you know, you mentioned starting out and you know, sitting over in the corner drawing on computer paper with your mechanical pencil. Obviously, you've come a long way since then, now that you're working digitally. So talk a little bit about that transition as well, if you could.
Yeah, sure. With the art, like with the really detailed, very, very hyper detailed stuff, that all stems from, I'm going to say it's probably from Bride of the Water God. If you ever get a chance to look up Bride of the Water God, it's manhwa, and it's by just an exceptionally talented Korean artist. And I mean, she just has so many flipping details, and her clothing are so intricate, and the hair, every single flipping strand is just inked, and she's just a master at detail. And so I am nowhere near that. Of course, I've always tried to emulate it, because she, you know, made an impact on me. So that's, I think, where I get a lot of my style for the detail. But as for the simpler stuff, I think I was more inspired by Mulan, like Disney's Mulan, where the intro has that pretty painting or parchment paper, and like it's just that nice classic, you know, old Chinese, Japanese, Korean style of painting and brushwork. And I always thought that was pretty too. So I just kind of like threw it together and thought, this will work. So, and as far as getting into digital, it was definitely slow going, because digital is not my forte. Of course, I can't think of many people that can just, you know, pick up, you know, a tablet and just start drawing amazing works of art just right off the bat. But I very slowly went into it, started doing realist painting, and then eventually found my passion again for anime. And the only reason why the passion, I guess, had died down was because during college, I was told not to draw that, quote, Japanimation crap, end quote. So because of my very angry art professors, I did lay that skill down for a while. So, but eventually I did pick it up, and it was much easier to work. I, you know, didn't give a crap about my college career and just did what I wanted to do. So
yeah, well,
that was a journey itself as well.
When we're talking about, you know, needing to put out a weekly strip, you know, digital, I mean, I know some webtoon creators still work traditionally, but, you know, just in terms of that deadline, you know, being able to work digitally, that speed with which you can fix mistakes, it's kind of crucial when you're talking about this kind of a schedule, right?
Oh my gosh, yes, definitely. I have to, you know, put out at minimum, you know, 60 panels a week, but a lot of times it'll be closer to 100, depends on how much time I've got. And yeah, being able to work digitally has certainly made the whole thing more streamlined. It's I couldn't be doing this the way that the masters did, so with all pen and paper, and you know, just I couldn't do it. That would definitely wouldn't work.
Yeah, another another aspect of your webtoon, which is really cool and adds to sort of the mood and the tone, is the music. Did you want to add that in right away? When did the music part of it come along?
Was offered to me by Kenny. Kenny Comics. He is a very, very talented composer, and he does the music for a lot of other webtoons, like Siren's Lament is one, I Love You is another. a lot of them and just kind of throws his music around. He's just very talented and offered, you know, for lunch, I wanted to have any music. And I was like, of course, because I know his work from Siren's Lament. And I thought, yes, please sign me up. And he came out with this like Asian style. And I was like, yeah, roll with that. So he pretty much just looked at the episode and came up with music for it like a little genius. And so, yeah, anytime he has time, he'll, you know, throw some music together for me and we'll put it in an episode. So I'm very, just very grateful to have him. He was just awesome. And his music has been amazing. I didn't even know that you could put music with a comic until Webtoon. So it kind of just opened up a new avenue for me. And I think that a lot of people have actually enjoyed it as well. Kind of like my first time reading a Webtoon and seeing there was gorgeous art and music to go with it. You know, I imagine that it also affects other people the same way whenever they pick up My Dear Cold-Blooded King and try to read it.
Yeah, I mean, the when I first started, so I read the Prelude, and then I was reading episode one, and I got a little way into it, maybe a third, and I was like, oh wait, I had clicked on the little you know, musical note, but I didn't have my speakers on, and I was like, wait a second, the music's not playing. And then I realized, oh, my speakers aren't on. And once I turned the music on, it was a totally different reading experience. It was so much richer. So I really feel like it adds a lot. So listeners, when you go to check out My Dear Cold-Blooded King, make sure your speakers are on, because the music does really enhance the feel of the story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. I can't, you know, sing his praises enough. Kenny is awesome. So definitely check out any Webtoon that he has music in, because it makes everything so much richer.
Yeah. Kate, the other thing I wanted to ask you about, you mentioned being on a few other platforms first before Webtoon, but Webtoon is unique in that you have that long vertical scroll. Was that an aspect that was a little tough to adjust to, or did it come naturally? Do you feel like you've managed to take advantage of that scroll in your storytelling?
Before I answer that, and you can edit this out, I just, I've lost a visual of my son, so I gotta go and check on him.
Okay, no problem at all.
So quiet. Okay. We've moved around a lot, so now I don't know.
Remember those days when you could put him down and they would be in the exact same place when they were like 4 months old?
Oh God, yes, I miss that so much. Monitor is now showing my son, and now the monitor is just showing, I think, blankets, but the blankets are moving up and down, so I assume that's him breathing. All right, we're good.
How old is he?
He's 11 months old. I can't believe it, because I'm not ready for him to be a year old next month.
It goes by fast, believe me. Enjoy it. My son is going to be 24 in about a month, and my daughter's 7. Going on 27. So,
oh my goodness.
Yeah, we had a little bit of a gap there, but trust me, they grow up so fast. It's unbelievable.
Oh my gosh. Well, you sound so very youthful. I would have never expected that you would have children of that age.
I appreciate that. Okay, you were going to tell us about the vertical scroll and the transition, and if you feel like you've been able to take advantage of it.
Oh, right. Okay. The vertical scroll, it was definitely new to me. I had seen a little bit of it on Tapastic, so I knew of its existence at the time, but I hadn't seen it done so well as I'd seen it on Webtoon by a professional featured artist. It was just mind-blowing. So at first, I didn't really know how to approach it, because, you know, I'm kind of old school. I did the page by page, like manga, read left to right, you know, just your standard Japanese style comic. And so I didn't know how I felt about it as far as me doing it. I was like, I can't do that. I don't have that skill. It's not within my ability. So I pretty much ruled myself out of it. But after I had gotten offered for the feature, because I had just started trying to do color. And so my later episodes that were coming out on the Discovered side, which is the side where you, well, yet to be discovered. So aptly named. I had just started trying to do color, introduce that vertical style into my layout, even though it wasn't really done that well, but I was certainly trying. So my editor was like, hey, would you be willing to conform more to the vertical layout? And I was like, I'll try. and it worked out, I think. I certainly love it. The fact that with vertical, I can do so much more than I ever could do with my little boxy, you know, page by page panels. I mean, I can, you know, make smoke, you know, whisk through an entire scene, or I can, you know, transition from night to day with just one giant long panel. And it's pretty because as you scroll, it goes from like sunset to night to day. And it's just a lot of fun to be able to just connect all of these. And so it seems like you're never really getting a break within panels. So it was, once I figured out kind of the things that I could do with it and I guess stopped putting myself in a box, I was able to really just kind of roll with it. Now I can't go back. Like, I love vertical. I don't want to go back to page by page comics. It's just, there's so much more that you can do with vertical, and I absolutely love the format.
Yeah, once you literally stopped putting yourself or your art in a box anyway, it really clicked for you.
Right.
Yeah, yes. And the other thing that I mentioned this to Webtoon creators is when you're reading it as you're scrolling, even though it's not, you know, Webtoon and these strips are not motion comics, when you use the scroll, you know, your mouse wheel or whatever, your finger as you're scrolling on a mobile device, you get some of the advantages of a motion comic. You know, it gives you a sense of movement. And the other thing that's really cool is the way that moments hit. You know, you can really give something emphasis and you put it at the bottom of a long panel, and it can be impactful in a way. Because even if you're not actively scanning when you turn the page on a traditional comic, you know, you turn the page and you start in the upper left and you move down to the lower right, you still can't you can't help but kind of absorb everything as you're looking at it. So moments like that can lose their impact, whereas here it's hidden until it pops up from the bottom of the screen, and you can really play with that a lot.
It's excellent. It's just, you're scrolling along and it just, I don't know. I'm definitely a fan, just a hardcore 100%. I love vertical style comics and will not go back to the old way.
Well, no reason to, right? No reason to. You did mention you have some other ideas for Webtoon strips in the future.
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh. Plenty. I have been making stories since I was old enough to make up stories. So I never run out of ideas. I write everything down in like the notes section of my iPhone. I write everything down and on my tablet, like on my computer. I have so many ideas. I have another comic lined up after this one. It's going to be a vampire romance, and I'm already keyed up about it and writing stuff down. I just can't wait.
So do you have an idea of how much longer My Dear Cold-Blooded King is going to run?
Oh yeah, definitely. I know exactly how much longer it's going to run. it will cap out at around 118 episodes, 120 if I count horribly wrong, because sometimes whenever I get to an episode, I realize that it's going to take up more space than I can do in a week because panels. But it should be under 120. So it'll be ending, you know, within around 30 episodes from right now, because I'm on hiatus.
Yeah, so you're getting close. You're closer to much closer to the end than you are to the beginning.
Oh yeah, and I have everything written out. Like, I know exactly how it's going, and I'm still throwing out episodes. And not that I'm looking forward to it ending. I'm just more excited about starting something new because I love creating, and who doesn't love a new thing? So,
right. You know. Going to be kind of bittersweet, right? This has been such a part of your life for a long time. It's your first project. It's hugely successful. It's going to be tough. It's going to feel like you're, you know, leaving one chapter of your life and starting a new one. So like I said, bittersweet, sad in a way, but also exciting because who knows what new adventures are around the corner.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I also wonder how the fan community is going to, it's probably going to be bittersweet for them as well. They're going to get to read something new from you, new projects, you know, something different. But it seems like you have a really loyal fan base for My Cold-Blooded King. And I'm sure they're anxious to find out how it's all going to end. But then at the same time, that means, okay, no more weekly Cold-Blooded King, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's extremely bittersweet for them. I'm like, oh, I already know how it's going to be. It's going to be fine. But, you know, it has become part of their, you know, their weekly routine. So I can understand. They're very invested. And from a reader standpoint, I too will be sad whenever a lot of my favorites will eventually stop because they have to end at some point. So I can understand that they would feel the same way about mine. Whereas I'm like, it's just My Dear Cold-Blooded King. It's my comic. It's fine. It's whatever. You guys will be fine. I mean, it's easy for me to think of that. I'm the creator. So.
Yeah. And you mentioned that you've had a chance to only interact with one other Webtoon creator in terms of, you know, attending convention or you know, interacting with them in real life. But it seems like it's a really good community in terms of very supportive, and everybody wants everybody's, you know, strips to succeed, and a rising tide floats all boats. Have you found that to be the case as well?
Oh my gosh, yes. I have no complaints with the creators and the community of Webtoon. I mean, all of the creators are just complete sweethearts. They're so, so wonderful. I have not met a single creator that I don't like. They are all really, really just a great bunch of people. So, I mean, we all do. We try to support each other. It doesn't feel like there's a rivalry. No one's trying to, you know, shoot the other person down. We're all like cheering for each other, and we're excited for each other's successes. I mean, if we all succeed, then, you know, well, we all succeed. One of us succeeds, all succeed. There we go. That's the saying. It's in our best interest that we all do well. We want the platform to do well. We want Webtoon to do well, and we want more creators to become featured, so that the, you know, the what is it? We get larger. That there's more of us. I don't know. It's just everyone's been so good, and we get along very well with one another. It's just it's a really nice environment. Very rarely do you get to work with you know, other people in your field, and you know, not have to feel scary starts of you know, competition. They're all sweethearts. Can't say it enough.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's the thing. It's the you're not competing. We want as many seats at the table as possible, because it just means more stories, which hopefully means more people interested, and then it's, you know, getting interested in other stories, because you can't, you know, you came in because you're a fan of this creator, and then you discover this. There's all kinds of different genres. I mean, it's an incredible platform. It's why I do what I do with the Webtoon Wednesdays, because I believe in it. The fact that the content is free and there's tons of it, but yet Webtoon has a model where you guys are making, you know, a good page rate, a competitive page rate with like Marvel, DC, that kind of thing. I mean, that is just amazing.
Oh yeah. Oh yes, they are amazing. Very amazing.
Well, I don't want to take up too much more of your time, Kate. I know you're busy, deadline, but I did want to give you the opportunity to let everybody know where to follow you on social media. So we'll know when you come off hiatus, we'll know when you're about to start any new projects. Where's the best place to get news about your work?
Definitely follow my my Twitter or my Instagram. I think I'm Lifelight Comics on both of those. I believe it's Lifelight _ Comics on Twitter, and then Lifelight Comics on Instagram. And of course, Patreon is always available. It's like patreon.com/lifelight. Any of those places will be good for just following me to figure out what's coming next. And I'm the most active on Twitter and Patreon. Instagram gets kind of left behind in the dust, but I have it, you know, just in case. I update my story sometimes there. So,
okay, and listeners, if you're having trouble finding Kate on social media, just go to the show notes. I'll put links to the Twitter, the Instagram, and the Patreon there. So, again, Kate, it was a pleasure to have you on. Love the Webtoon. Hoping to get caught up. It's high on my list of things that I need to read. Looking forward to that, and looking forward to your upcoming projects as well. So, best of luck, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.